Good afternoon and welcome to my Ask the Experts live interview series. For those of you who are new here, my name's Anne Garcia. I'm a fee-only financial advisor in Portland, Oregon, and I also write a blog called The College Financial Lady. As part of that, I try to help families find affordable solutions for college and understand the application and financial aid process. While doing that, I found I get a lot of questions about different aspects of the planning process. And part of that has led me to a great organization that has a chapter here in Portland called College Possible. And today I am interviewing Emily Nishik, who's the executive director of College Possible Oregon. Emily joined the organization in 2015, having previously served as their director of development and communications, and has helped to triple the budget and expand programming and students served across the state of Oregon. Emily herself is a first-generation college graduate, and she believes strongly in the power of education and is honored to be able to meld her personal experience and passion to further the mission of College Possible. She has a Master's of Public Administration and a Certificate in Nonprofit Management from Portland State University and volunteers with several community-based organizations focused on educational equity in Oregon, including Kairos PDX, 99 Girlfriends Women's Giving Collective, and on the Partnership Council with All Hands Raised. The greatest joy and challenge of Emily's life is being a mother to two small children and teaching them to love all the outdoor adventures that that our state of Oregon offers. So Emily, tell me a little bit about College Possible.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit about our program and our students here in Oregon. College Possible is a college access and success program working with historically underserved students in Oregon. We are part of a national organization that is in seven states across the country. But our local efforts here are very much focused on increasing college graduation rates for historically underserved students in Oregon. We serve students in our high school program, the Access portion of our program, in seven high schools within the Portland metro area, mostly in East County, working on providing access and opportunity to, with a very strong focus on four-year options for students. 3.5 years ago, we started a pilot program called our Navigate program that also works with students in rural Oregon. We are in 8 school districts in both Eastern Oregon and Northwest Oregon, working with the smaller student population to help increase access for students in rural communities where there's even additional barriers for them to attend a four-year school.
Excellent. And it seems like you have an excellent success rate.
We do. We are in our seventh year of programming here in Oregon. So we start serving students in their junior year of high school, and we stay with them until they graduate college. So right now we just finished celebrating our 5th year of serving students in our college programs. We had our second graduating class. And when we have reached the 6th year mark, so next year, we will have our comparative data around our college graduation rates, because higher ed and all the comparative data is based off of 6-year rates, even though it's a 4-year degree. And so we are really looking forward to be able to see overall for Oregon ourselves where our success rate is. As an organization, our students graduate at 3 times the rate of their peers. And so that is a peer group of students that come from historically underserved communities that are come from low-income families. So all of our students come from low-income families. And really looking at having our graduation rate be similar to students across all income levels. That is what we've been able to achieve as an organization as a whole, and we're really looking forward to seeing that for Oregon as well.
Excellent. So, you know, when you think of high school juniors and seniors looking towards college, there's so many aspects of preparing for college. You know, obviously there's the academic piece of it, there's the application piece of it, there's the financial piece of it. Can you talk a little bit about the specific things that your program does with these students?
Yeah, so we are an AmeriCorps service organization, which means that we have all of our direct services done by recent college graduates. They are doing 1 to 2 terms of service with us. And we start serving students in their junior year of high school. We are embedded within the schools that we serve. So that means that we have a cohort of 40 juniors and 40 seniors at each one of the high schools that we're in. And those coaches are there 4 days a week, working with students one-on-one during the day, and then holding after-school session 4 times a week. That is our typical model. I'll talk a little bit about how things are shifting with COVID. But our typical model and how it's based is very much this cohort model, where we can have a group of students that have the same desires, the same really strong desire to earn a four-year degree, be together and be able to build a community along with their coach, to really be able to discover options, discover college fit, and really kind of decide for themselves where they see themselves being successful. And so the junior year of our program has typically been very much focused on the ACT and doing college prep work. So the students typically take 4 practice tests and then a real deal test for the ACT to increase their score. They do a lot of testing techniques and sort of all of the training from Princeton Review that someone from a higher income background might go and outsource and get a coach for that. And so that's really what our coaches are working on with the students. They're working on fit factors and where students see themselves being successful, what their interests are. Our goal is that when our students go into senior year, they're going to apply to 5 colleges so that they can get back 5 financial aid packages. They can get back maybe a safety school, a stretch school, an out-of-state school. And so really looking at creating options for students so that they're not just looking at maybe what's in their neighborhood or the local community college or the local school, but where do they see that their desires and needs match with what the university is offering is really our aim goal, so that they can be successful when they step on campus.
Excellent. So you mentioned being in 7 schools and then having 40 juniors and 40 seniors in each school. How do you identify those students in those schools?
Yeah, so we have strong partnerships with our districts and at the high school level. And we've grown. When we started in Oregon serving students, we were in 4 high schools in East County and have since expanded that. And that's been through district partnerships and high schools reaching out to us and asking us to come and serve students there. Like I said, the coaches are typically on campus 4 days a week. And then they come into the office on Fridays for training. So they're doing continual training throughout the year on the next thing that the students will be working on. And so we identify the students based on our criteria of they have to qualify as low income, and that's self-reported and off of free and reduced lunch is how we identify that. They have to have a strong desire to want to attend a 4-year school. So because our cohort model is a limited number of students, and some of the schools that we're operating in have thousands of students, we're really looking for that student population that has a strong desire to want to go to a 4-year school, recognizing that that might change because when they're recruited into the program, they're
16-year-olds change their minds.
So it's really, our focus is we want to grab those students who want to go, but recognizing that if they change their mind and want to go to a 2-year, that they're still getting the support that they need. They still get a coach because we want them to be successful at whatever program they decide. If they decide to go get a certificate, great. We want them to complete that certificate and get a living wage job. And so our focus is really meeting the students' needs. And then the other piece of that is they need to have a requirement is a GPA of 2.5 or higher. So we're looking at those students that we say are in the academic middle. They're not like the super high flyers of the class that are probably going to get there on their own. They're the students that maybe don't have a model in their life of someone who's gone before 90% of our students are first generation students. And so maybe they haven't seen themselves as being a college student. Maybe they don't have someone in their life who they've seen gone through that process for the support. And so it's really looking at those students who might not make it on their own, who just need a little extra guidance, a little extra support. And sometimes just somebody telling you you can do it and believing in them is a lot of what our coaches do, is building those really strong relationships with the students.
Absolutely. So then how does that relationship shift once they get into college? Because obviously getting there is one thing, but actually completing it is a whole different thing. And one of the worst outcomes for students is, you know, going to college, taking on some debt to do so, and then not actually earning a degree.
Absolutely. So our organization was actually founded as Admissions Possible. That was what the goal of the organization was. And they recognized pretty early on, like just like what you said, that getting there is half the battle, but being successful on campus and being able to successfully earn their degree was a really, really big struggle. And that it was an area that there isn't a lot of organizations working in that college success piece of it. And so what kind of sets our program apart is in Oregon, we're really the only program to scale that serves the number of students that we serve that has that college success coaching piece built into our program model. So every student that goes through our high school program gets assigned a college coach no matter where they go in the country. And so right now our Oregon students are at over 70 colleges across the country right now. And no matter where they go, they get a coach. And so that means that our model shifts to a tech connected, is what we call it, coaching model, where it moves very much to one-on-one with the coach. A coach has a portfolio of students that they work with, that they reach out to on an individual basis, helping them navigate their new campus. So our goal is really to help students get connected on the campus where they are. So it's helping them find those resources, helping them build their community there, and create that sense of belonging for them so that they can find their student group, their friend group, their interests. One thing about first-generation students is if you haven't had, and I know this from experience, if you haven't had someone in your family who has gone and maybe lived on campus somewhere, and you don't feel like maybe you're totally belong there, you don't want to go reach out for resources. It's sort of this weird, tricky thing where you think, well, we have all of these resources, why aren't students coming? And just by the nature of going is showing people that you don't belong, especially if you have like what we call imposter syndrome. And so you kind of don't want anybody to know that you need help, even though you're the one that needs help. And so our coaches serve as this sort of third party person to be able to say, hey, like you're struggling with writing, go to the writing center. That's what it's for. I used it and this is how it can benefit you. And it's having that person that you have a relationship with to be able to guide you and direct you to the resources that are available on campus. And then another big piece of it is just troubleshooting issues with students around maybe financial gaps. Around filling out their FAFSA. It's not done. Your first, you know, your senior year is just the beginning of FAFSA for your college journey. And so you still need support through that. Oftentimes it's still complicated. And then sometimes it's interpersonal things and helping them troubleshoot with a roommate situation or needing to switch housing. There's just a lot of complicated things that can happen. And if you're away from home for that first time, it can be really helpful to just call and troubleshoot things with.
Yeah. So you mentioned the FAFSA, and I'd love to segue a little bit, because I was just reading the 2020 version of Sallie Mae's How America Pays for College. And something that was really surprising in a disappointing way was that about one third of low income students didn't complete the FAFSA for the 2019 and 2020 school year. And what was really even more disappointing about that is it seems like the reasons that they cited for not doing it are things that we as a society could have better addressed. Things like thinking they wouldn't qualify for financial aid or missing the deadline, or 17% of the families who didn't fill it out said they didn't even know it existed. Can you tell me about some of the things? I mean, obviously you're working one-on-one with students, so you your coaches are making sure that they do that. But what are some of the things that you think we could be doing better to increase completion rates of the FAFSA?
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of barriers that on the surface look like, oh, they missed the deadline, they just need to know about it more, and they look like simple issues that can be solved easily. And I think that when you're working with first-generation, historically underserved populations that maybe have language barriers, that have parents that might be working multiple jobs, that don't have the person who's gone through it before them to be able to sort of guide that process, it can be incredibly complicated and cumbersome. Additionally, we have students that might not have the documentation that they need to be able to complete it. FAFSA verification is a huge issue for not just our students, but all low-income students. 30 to 40% of FAFSA applications get flagged for verification. And what that
will be better? Do you think that'll be better now with the changes where now head of household and some of the other statuses will automatically transfer over?
Or? Our hope is, and we worked on advocacy efforts at the national level to help bring about some of that change. I think that we still saw, unfortunately, this spring, about the same number, at least for our students, of verification. And what that meant for them is that happened during when COVID first hit. And so the offices that they could go to that they would have gone in person to turn in paperwork or to fax or sort of just all of those technical issues got really delayed and backlogged for students. And a lot of times students will give up on the process. Like, it's just too cumbersome and too hard for them.
And I will say my son's FAFSA got flagged for verification and it was a pain in the neck.
Yeah, it's a lot. And then if you don't have the tax, multiple years of taxes and just.
And it was his tax return. And you're like, what 19-year-old has their tax return lying around?
Yep, 2 years ago. So, and there's also just like a huge equity piece that you're asking people who already are coming from huge disadvantages to then say, okay, we know that you're poor, now prove it. And like what that means for someone who's going through that and experiencing that, who already has had tons of messages along the way telling them that they aren't equal and they aren't good enough, to then get to this process where they want to take that next step, but oh, you need to prove it, is it creates a big issue, I think, for just how people feel going into the college process. And the FAFSA isn't easy. It's not intuitive. It's like any other government form, and I know I filled out my own my entire way through and filled it out for my parents and had my dad sign it. So there, it's not something that if you aren't used to doing that, it's definitely not intuitive for students. And then the other piece of it is just a lot of misinformation out there in the community around the FAFSA verification but filling out the FAFSA in general, whether or not it gets flagged for things or, whether or not it's true that you're going to get free money. And there's just a lot of misinformation floating in the community that our coaches are constantly trying to kind of combat with that. And then as a larger whole, when you're looking at how many students per counselor ratio in the high schools and how many students are trying to help, especially in the metro area, there's a lot of work being done on FAFSA nights and trying to get families to come in and sort of work on it as a bigger whole. And we do support that at the schools that we have where we are in. We help with those FAFSA nights for students that are in our program, but just really wanting everybody to fill it out as a sort of collective goal. But it continues to be, I think, a real challenge. And our students, actually, we met our FAFSA completion rate goal for the year, but I have heard nationally that it has been a real challenge. And part of that is we have our students start very early in that process to be able to complete it, and then they can focus on the scholarship piece of it afterwards.
Yeah. Well, and especially so much of OSAC is first come, first serve. So I would think you want, want your students getting it in early. And
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. And Oregon Aid is tied to that too.
So your model, you have this one-on-one approach that serves a good number of people in the community, but knowing the need is far larger than what your organization is able to serve. Are there and thinking that there are maybe parents, teachers, guidance counselors listening to this, what are some things you would like the community as a whole to know that we could all be doing to help get kids through this process and make college accessible to a larger segment of our society?
Sure. I think a part of what has made our program successful is we call them ripples. And so it's this ripple effect that can happen within a school of having students sort of shifting the college-going culture within a school. So part of it is the messaging that you're getting from your administration, from your school, from your teachers, from your counselors, is that you as a student are seen as college potential and have the ability and capability to go. And that messaging starts really young. It doesn't start their senior year in high school. And so it's ensuring that all students are getting the encouragement that they deserve and really being set up for success, so that when they get to that application point, that they have options, that they know the difference between a private school and a for-profit school and a community college, and sort of building that knowledge along the way, I think is really important for students, so that by the time they get to their junior year, oftentimes there's been a lot of things that have happened to them that make it really difficult to get in. So I think part of it is building that culture within the school. We especially see that in our rural community, where there's a pretty strong pull to stay in the community. I came from a rural community in Oregon. It's where I grew up, and there's definitely a strong push to either stay in the community or go into the military and do service, and not as much counselors or admissions officers coming from colleges and universities. And so really that sort of exposure, I think, is so critical for students to be able to see themselves on a college campus, know what that's like. We do campus tours, and for many of our students, it's the first time they've ever stepped foot on a college campus. Mm-hmm. And that might be students that live in East County, or it might be students in our rural community. And so it's really that exposure and access to what higher ed is that is really important. And then I think organizations like All Hands Raised that are doing convenings with the districts and looking at these more system-wide approaches, a big part of what they're focusing on is the FAFSA completion rates. And so bringing in all the districts that operate in the metro area to have a common goal and put some very strategic pieces in place to be able to increase the FAFSA completion, and really using partners, school partners in the community, working with the students to increase the capacity of the schools that are stretched so thin right now, I think, especially with what we're facing now.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it starts around messaging and who belongs in college, and who, what society determines as the college student, and the admissions process. So I think that the test optional is a good step forward for students, because that's such a huge barrier. And we know that it's not an good indicator of success and whether or not a student will be successful on campus.
It's a great indicator of who your parents are, right?
Exactly. Yep. And what school you went to and how much college prep they had and how well you take a test. And so I think that we are starting to see some systems change in that area, and I hope it's just the tip of the iceberg, because there's a lot of institutional barriers in there that are preventing students from even being able to take that step. And like I said, it starts early. It doesn't start junior year.
Yeah. Do you also work with students on applying for third-party scholarships, things like that?
Yeah, so senior year is about applications for college, and then it's the FAFSA, and then we spend a good half of the year doing the scholarship piece of it. Both with local scholarships, we have Questbridge Scholars, we have Gates Scholars, and it's really working on helping them put together their best possible application and setting really tangible goals around how many scholarships we want students to fill out, so that they have sort of a benchmark for themselves, and then filling those financial gaps and not having that process stop once they get their financial aid package, but encouraging them to continue to apply. Same in college, a lot of times you have to reapply, so it's still helping them fill their financial needs once they're in college as well.
Do you find that do you find that your students are getting financial aid packages that are workable for them? I mean, obviously they're going on to college, but you know, how much of that process is saying, I really don't think you want to go here because it's going to cost you too much?
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about, and we're actually sort of redesigning our college program around using our own data on institutions that have successful graduation rates for the population of students that we serve, so that they have, they're successfully graduating students without a ton of debt, and that students have had a good experience on those college campuses. And so part of, we in the past have been pretty hands-off on our guidance around, these are your packages, now you go and make the decision with your family. And I think we are trying to take the data that we have over 20 years to say, well, this might be a better fit for you. This school has programming in place that is going to directly be able to support you and your needs. They have successfully graduating students at a good rate. And so we are taking a little bit more of an advisory role in that final decision making process. But your question about financial packages, it's interesting because we're in 7 different states, and Oregon has really large financial gaps for our students. Even if there's zero family contribution, there's often still a gap. And so especially when you're looking at the GPA requirement to be in our program, some of our students might be at the lower end. And so they are often seeing larger financial gaps in the packages. And there's just really no safety school for students here in the state system. In some of the other states that we operate, there's a 2.75 sort of automatic admittance, and Oregon's the lowest one is a 3.0. And so that can often be a barrier where we see a lot of our students starting at community college, either because they didn't get a great financial package or because of Oregon Promise, where they can sort of do those first 2 years free and then transfer over. So I would say that our financial packages are not as robust as we're seeing in some of our other states.
So this has all been really, really helpful. Are there things that you would like us to know about your organization? You know, how can we support you? How can we support your mission in the community? You know, what would you like people to know about College Possible?
Yeah, I think that first and foremost, like the students that we serve are amazing, and they put in such an incredible amount of effort and work into this process. And it's way harder than it should be for them to be able to do it. And you, as a mom of twins, know like how hard that process is. And so I think that anything that we can do around legislation or sort of systems change to be able to make that process easier, I think is really important. We are a nonprofit, so we're mostly funded by philanthropic donations. So anybody is always welcome to go on and make a contribution to help support the students and their coaches through our program. And I think the year ahead is going to be incredibly challenging for our students and for our program. I mean, we operate in both K-12 and higher ed, and so trying to track what is happening right now in both of those landscapes is incredibly challenging, both for us to be able to support our students well and for our students, and to be able to navigate like what the best choices are for them right now in this moment is really, really challenging. And so for us, the support that we can provide feels much more vital than it ever has before, especially as we're looking at the virtual programming and students just needing to be connected and having a personal connection if we're looking at going, which it looks like mostly virtual in this area. So I think support is crucial right now for students, for all students looking at the college piece of it. And any support anybody would like to go on and donate, we'd always welcome it.
That's collegepossible.org, right?
Yep, collegepossible.org. And we do have a plan to fully serve our students throughout this coming year. We will be going virtual with our programming until January, because we're in 14 different districts and the college piece of it. It just felt really difficult to have 14 different plans to operate in. And so we have taken all of the knowledge. Like, we're really fortunate that we had a tech-based model already that we have been able to very quickly adapt to our high school program. And so we're working over the summer to take our curriculum to match that so where we can still fully serve our students in a virtual way in the fall. And then we'll sort of just keep an eye on what's happening with COVID-19 and be ready to adjust when it feels safe to do so.
Excellent. Well, this has been really, really helpful and informative. So thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
For joining us here. And I'm going to end our broadcast right now. So again, this is Emily Nishik from College Possible, and their website is collegepossible.org, and they welcome your donations. They're really a wonderful organization doing great work making college accessible to a broader range of students. So thank you so much, Emily.
Thank you, Anne.